Pauline Frommer, Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show. Only here, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
And welcome to The Frommer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Frommer.
And I'm Jason Cochran.
And we're going to be taking your calls. As always, the number is 800-848-WABC. For those who prefer digits, that's 800-848-9222. And we also take questions by email. And we're going to turn one of those questions that we got into the question of the day. It comes from a listener named Richard. He says, in one of your recent episodes, you mentioned these international companies where one could find international guides. Can you relist those? I'm looking for a guide between Sweden. Well, I think actually in Switzerland is what he meant, for Zurich and Basel and a couple of small towns in Germany. Well, we'll answer that question, but let's make the question of the day. Have you ever used a private guide when you traveled? How did you find them? Did it work out? Was it worth the money? Because it can be a pricey thing to do. Give us a call, 800-848-9222, or shoot us an email to frommertravelshow@yahoo.com. And to answer Richard's question, there are three major companies that you can find guides through. There are probably more, but these are the ones that we think do a good job. One is called Viator, V-I-A-T-O-R. It lists group tours as well as personal guides. Another is called toursbylocals.com, and another is called getyourguide.com. These are all marketplace sites. I don't think that they vet the guides who are on these sites. However, you do get to read information on all of the guides. I've had a good experience with a private guide. Have you ever, Jason?
I have sometimes taken private guides, especially when I'm doing work, you know, and I've also had great experience, but I think it also depends on whether that private guide has accreditation of some kind. Some places require guides to go through a very rigorous course, and lots of tests and then trial runs before they give them the badge or whatever the equivalent is in that destination. And I do find there's a correlation in places that have that kind of a system between the good guides and the ones that don't in countries where anyone can be a guide. You can really tell. And one way to find these accredited guides is often just to go to the official tourism office and ask them, if you know, where can I find an accredited guide? And I know they're blue badge guides in the UK. And in Israel, I think you've said at some time there's an accreditation system.
Yes, absolutely.
But not every destination has them. So you can ask at the tourism bureau, send them an email if you want. And sometimes you can even go to that actual website of the accreditation bureau and there'll be a list of guides to choose from and what their specialties are.
Yeah, I think that's a smart thing to do. I had a lousy guide once in Cochin, India. He was so boring, and he was telling us about the history, and I started noticing that he was giving us different dates for the same things that he would repeat some of the seminal historic things that had happened in Cochin, but each time he did, he gave us a different date. And so I started thinking, this guy's just making it up. And he just was really dull. But in Taiwan,
yeah, you have to be a good storyteller as well as no
storyteller.
And he had, I went to one guy who just kept saying, at this time, we will be doing this. And they go over, and at this time, we will now go over here. And we are all ready to die, even though it was the most fascinating subject possible. So you had an experience in Taiwan, I think you want to talk
about.
Yeah,
I had a really good experience in Taiwan with a guide there who, she took me to some of the off-the-beaten-path locations. Like at one point, we were walking through this. She told me about current Taiwanese culture. So it wasn't just history. She really explained what it meant to live in Taiwan now. And at one point, we were running through this small alleyway, And in this alleyway, there were all of these women in their 60s, and they were all kind of hanging out there in house coats. And I thought, why are all these women just milling around? And I said to her, who are all these women? What are they doing in this alley? And at first she didn't want to answer. And then she kind of spat out the word prostitutes. Oh. And I said, prostitutes? How can they be prostitutes? They're so old. And she said, well, these are the prostitutes for the older men, and there are younger prostitutes for the younger men. And I have to say, thumbs up to Taiwan in a certain way. This kind
well, also
of says
thumbs
something.
Up to that guide, because that's not the kind of information you would see in a Fromer's guide. We don't tell you where to go for, you know,
for prostitution.
That kind of thing.
No. So she knew how to tell a story. She knew how to make it fascinating, and she knew how to give me insights into Taiwanese culture, and I was very grateful for that. I see we have a call on the phone. We have Gary from Edison, New Jersey. Hey, Gary, thanks for calling. You're our first today.
I went on a cruise, and I was had a day or so in, well, Civitavecchia, and I took the train to Rome. I arranged a half a day tour, which was very good, private tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to things I had not seen the other times I was in Rome, although we did pass the Colosseum. It's hard not to.
Right, sure.
And he showed me the spot where they had a memorial for 9/11.
Oh, interesting.
Ended up also showed me on this hill, if you look through the keyhole, which I finally did get to take the picture, although it was kind of hard. You take the picture through the keyhole, you see Basilica San Pietro, St. Peter's Basilica.
Wow, perfectly framed in the
right.
keyhole. I think I've seen people who have that photo. Yeah, it's a great photo.
And then also, even though the catacombs was closed, he did take me to, because it was closed on a Wednesday, I guess it's closed on Wednesdays. And he took me to this monastery where I saw a whole bunch of bones and that made up for it.
Uh-huh.
Went on Via Appia, the Appia Way, saw the different arches, and also Baths of Caracalla.
Mm. And that's great, because you would have had a hard time necessarily doing all of that so quickly if you had to figure it all out on your own. So in that case, finding a guide was a smart choice. But how did you find the guide? Do you recall?
I went online. I forgot the site that I ended up seeing. It might have been Via Tours. I don't know. But I went online, and I was able to get a hold of this.
Okay, well, it sounds like it was a good day, especially, you know, when you have Rome as a stop on a cruise, you're not that near to Rome. You as you said, you go to Civitavecchia, which is about an hour and 15-minute train ride from Rome. So it's good to have somebody at your side who can help you see what you want to see efficiently.
Right, he met me at Termini Station, Stazione Termini, and everything worked like clockwork.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, thank you, Gary. We appreciate you
thank
calling
you.
In.
Bye-bye.
If anybody else has travel questions or want to talk about your guide experiences, 800-848-9222 is the number, 800-848-9222. Speaking about cruises, there's been an interesting development with Viking River Cruises. They didn't make an announcement about this, but the sharp-eyed folks at Travel Weekly, which is the premier magazine for people in the travel industry, they noticed that Viking changed their fine print, and they're no longer allowing people under 18 onto their river cruises, which is really interesting because I didn't know they were the first to do this. Usually when you go on a river cruise, you don't see kids. It's not really a...
But it's not, you're right. It hasn't been written down in the rules. It just seems to be that everyone kind of knows it's something for an older crowd. And so it is interesting that they would put it in the fine rules but not make a big deal out of it. So they're not making it their niche.
Right.
They're just banning them. Maybe this is possibly partly because of alcohol, because now they can serve alcohol freely on board.
Oh, that's interesting.
Without worrying about children. That's one guess. And perhaps, you know, also a river cruise, I guess it's much easier to tumble off of one of those than it might be, you know, a giant one. So if you have everyone's of age, you know, perhaps there's more responsibility. I don't know. What do you think the reasons are?
I guess, you know, I mean, a river cruise is a very elegant, maybe sedate activity, and maybe they've had problems with kids being on board. And I would think there are a couple of river cruises run by Tauk and run by, one other company that are geared towards families, and they have special counselors on board, keeping things lively for the kids. But for the most part, I think most children would be really bored on a river cruise. They don't have pools. They don't have children's activities. They, you know, the countryside kind of inches by 5 miles an hour or so. You learn a lot about history,
it's terribly boring. But there, I mean, it's interesting. I'm all for some travel products being just for adults. I know there are people who bristle at the idea that my children can't come, but there's lots and lots of travel product for families. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a product that's just for grownups. Vodka, for example, would be one of them, right? And why not, you know, okay, our cruise is going to be just for grownups. You know, we don't hate kids, but it's, you know, we want a quiet atmosphere. I'm for it.
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with it, and it's interesting that they took what has been a very adult activity and kind of put it down in the fine print now. Yep, this is meant for adults. We have to take our first break of the hour. Do me a favor. Give us a call now rather than later. It happened to us last week as well. We got so many calls last week. The phones were blazing, but mostly in the second half of the show, and it broke my heart because we didn't get to everybody. So 800-848-9222 is our number. Before we go to break, though, let me remind everybody that our major sponsor on this show is Allianz Travel Insurance, and they're a big part of the travel experience, because sometimes things go wrong, and it's not fun to have things go wrong when you're in another country. You could get ill. You could lose your luggage. You could miss that cruise boat and have to get to the next port on your own. When those things happen, it's great to have someone in your corner. That someone should be Allianz Travel Insurance. To find out about all of their policies, visit allianztravelinsurance.com. That's allianztravelinsurance.com.
Pauline Frommer, Jason Cochran, The Frommer Travel Show, only here where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the Frommer Travel Show. I'm Pauline Frommer here with Jason Cochran. Our number, just as a reminder, is 800-848-WABC. That translates to 800-848-9222. And we have Pat on the phone. Pat is from Montfield, New Jersey. Where is Montfield, Pat?
Oh, it's Montville.
Oh, Montville. Oh, okay.
We're Northwest New Jersey.
Okay.
Well, and thanks so much for taking my call.
Absolutely. Nice to speak with you.
Yeah. I'm planning a trip to London, and I'd like to do an independent tour. And you were talking about different tour companies, tour guides, but I was looking into Monograms, which they're part of Globus.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure, you know, I have your guidebook to London.
Oh, you do? Written by Jason. It's beautiful,
Hello?
Isn't it?
It's
a great book.
But I was wondering, I sort of don't want to go there and just, you know, not know, you know, I don't want to be with a tour because we've done tours, but I sort of want to do my own pace.
You know, when I first heard about the Monograms concept, I thought it was brilliant because what they seemed to offer was the safety net of having a concierge there who could really help you, and that you would who would give you an option of taking tours or not, and they would set up the hotel for you. What I found it to be, though, and I did experience it, this is many years ago, so maybe it's changed, but they put you in the standard hotels that they put your tour groups in. So you're with people all around you who are on these massive tour groups. They're usually not the greatest hotels. And then every day you speak to their advisor on site who tries to pitch you on a group tour. So even though you're not taking a tour where you're with the same group of people each day, you're not with a private guide or even with a small tour. Their tours tend to be 40 people in a bus.
Yeah.
So I think you can do better. Jason, you're the expert on London. How would you recommend she do it?
Well, if you remember a few minutes ago, I was talking about how it's a great idea to see if there's an accreditation system in the place you're going. London has an accreditation system for its guides, and they have a guild, the British Guild of Tourist Guides. It has a website at britainsbestguides.org, britainsbestguides.org, and you can find an accredited blue badge guide through that. You can choose specialties, language spoken. There's a whole database, and their photograph. So if you want to find someone to lead you around during the day, you can take care of the hotel part yourself extremely easily and cheaply. And you can choose a neighborhood you'd like to be in and then just book the guide to come meet you at the hotel every single day and to do the things that you have an interest in. They'll cater it to your taste. So I would use the British Guild of Tourist Guides.
But that being said, that'll be expensive. And London is not that difficult of a city to manage on your own. They speak English, obviously. And there are things like there's a wonderful company called London Walks that leads walking tours in different neighborhoods. I think their tours are smashing and much less.
They're considered the best walking tour outfit probably in the world. They literally have dozens of availabilities every single day and different topics all in the city, and you don't even have to book. You just, as they say, rock up when it starts and you get to go, and it's £10 each. I think walks.com is that website.
Yeah, and they also...
Oh, it's walks.com.
Walks. Okay. You'll find it in Jason's book, Fromer's Easy Guide to London.
Right, and I have to...
And you'll also be going to different attractions, like, say, the Tower of London, where you'll be able to join a tour. And there are wonderful docent-led tours at the British Museum and Victoria and Albert Museum. I don't know, Jason. I mean, you're the
unless you have a very specific set of interests. Like, I want to see, houses built in the Tudor period that are still standing that would be very hard to find otherwise. Then you get a guide. But I think Pauline is right. In general, everything is so well marked and English is spoken. There's lots and lots of books available, just like New York City. People love their city, London. So it's really easy to find information without having to have a guide. And they're not going to get you around the city any easier than you could do yourself either.
Right, and best to just use the book, and then because I find on tours it's rushed, and we want to spend more time in one museum, and
it's rushed, and on tours there's always that one person who has to talk about what's going on in their hometown rather than what's right in front of them, and they kind of
that's not the way we do it at home.
Well, you've been one of the hotels, by the way, the Park Plaza, I believe, that's near, it's right in the center of things. I think it was recommended.
There's a few Park Plazas. One of them is the Westminster Bridge, which might be the one you're thinking about. It's a giant, giant hotel, but very popular, and it's extremely near Big Ben. And if you get the right room category, you'll have a great view right down at Parliament at Big Ben. You have to pay a little more, but I think it's worth it.
It's a great view, but not many restaurants or other stuff in that area, right?
Well, it's on the south side of the Thames where you have a little bit more of a choice these days. But yes, the north side at Parliament and Big Ben, there's not much right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've been very helpful, and I've been meaning to call you about this, but, because I like to sort of plan my own trips.
Yeah.
And I think London I can do on my own with my husband.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, I'm going to look into the British Best Guides. And the other one was viatours.com, and there was tourguide.com.
Viator.com, toursbylocals.com, and getyourguide.com. These are the major marketplace sites if you want to have a day with a private guide.
Tours by locals.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
Have a wonderful time, Pat. All right. Let's turn to Joe in Paterson, New Jersey. Joe, thanks for your patience. You're live on the Travel Show.
And great show as always. So look forward to it every weekend.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about a trip to Tokyo, Japan, and I have two questions. I'll ask them and then I'll hang up and listen to your answers.
But you don't have to hang up.
Okay. Is Japan very expensive? And my second question is, Japan Airlines, 30 years ago was the creme de la creme, and 20 years ago ANA was the creme de la creme. But I haven't heard too much about those two airlines lately. Are they still as good as they used to be? Or
I think they're fine. I was just in Japan in the spring, and I flew Japan Airlines, and it was a fine ride. It wasn't anything to write home about, but it, you know, it got me there, and it, I was in
economy
class.
Yeah, what airline
class.
Is these days if you're writing in economy? I hear slightly better things about ANA, but truthfully, if the price is about the same or it's not the same, I wouldn't go out of my way necessarily to choose one over the other.
Right. And in terms of Japan being expensive, it's not a cheap destination, but it's less expensive than it was when the yen was strong against the dollar. Right now, the yen is still pretty weak, and there are ways to do it inexpensively. I'm assuming since your name is Joe and your voice is fairly deep that you're male, which means that you could stay in one of the capsule hotels. Those don't tend to be open to women, but they're very, very cheap. You kind of sleep in an often like a coffin-like capsule.
Sell it, Pauline.
I'm 6'5". I don't think I can do that.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. But there are budget lodgings that you can do there. You can always grab just a bowl of ramen, which will be delicious. So there are ways to save money in Japan, and it's not nearly as expensive as it used to be a couple of years back when the yen was strong against the dollar. But it's not cheap. I would be lying to you if I said it's a budget destination.
And what would be your second city to visit or second place to visit in Japan after Tokyo?
Well, the classic is Kyoto. Kyoto was the royal capital of the country for many, many centuries. So it's filled with exquisite temples, and it has a palace, and it's just a gorgeous little city. Near to it is Nara, which also was a royal city, and it has this really cool park where there are these royal buildings, and because deer were considered sacred, there are hundreds of deer just kind of wandering around, and they sell you food to give to the deer, and they nibble it out of your hand, and it's delightful.
And what's the best way to get to Kyoto from Tokyo?
Most people,
that is the famous bullet train. Most people always want to take that famous bullet train that goes not fast as fast as the bullet, but incredibly fast. They're all over Japan, but Kyoto to Tokyo is one of the most popular routes. They call it a Shinkansen, but you can Google bullet train and it'll still come up.
And it takes about 2 hours between the two cities. Another city people tend to go to is Hiroshima. So they can see the famous memorial, and, you know, that's a very moving place to visit. Those are the top cities, but there are so many. I mean, Japan's an absolutely fascinating country. I highly recommend Japan. It's really terrific. And we have a new book coming out just in a couple of months called Tokyo, Kyoto, and Western Honshu. Honshu is the main island of Japan. I think you'll find that really helpful. We have to take a break. Roger, we will take you as soon as we get back from these commercials to anybody else who wants to call. Once again, the number is 800-848-9222.
This is the Frommer Travel Show. Inspiring locations, inspiring ideas for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
This program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment with Allianz. Visit Allianz, travelinsurance.com. And as I said at the top, we love getting your emails to frommertravelshow@yahoo.com. We got one from Lee who recommends Context Travel for small guided tours, and she is absolutely right. They are a wonderful company with real experts all around the world. She also recommends the World Greeters programs, which are terrific. If you go to globalgreeters.org, you will find volunteer tour guides around the world who actually do tours for free. In places like Tokyo, like New York City, like Adelaide, Australia. So thank you, Lee, so much for those terrific suggestions. We also have phone calls. 800-848-9222 is our number, and the very patient Roger in Long Island is up first. Hey, Roger, welcome to the Travel Show.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I've been a guest destination lecturer on cruise ships for a lot longer than I'd like to remember. And, of course, when you're on a cruise ship, you can never interfere with the shore excursions because that is a big moneymaker.
Right.
Next to bingo, that's probably the the biggest money maker they have. Anyway, so I've always had to curtail what I would talk about or what I would make recommendations. And, you know, I think listening to you and finding that these sites where you can go and they'll guarantee that they're going to get you back to the ship.
Sure.
Is really invaluable.
So, as a longtime insider, you've never been able to really speak your mind and tell the cruise passengers that the cruise lines excursions that they're trying to sell them and trying pretty hard. It's a hard sell on cruise lines, that they're not worth the money, right?
Well, you're almost right.
Okay.
Because I do something called the Cruise Experience in the libraries in Long Island, and I do them for practically nothing because this is the first time you really feel super clean and you can tell the truth.
You can tell the truth, yeah.
You can talk about the pitfalls that they're going to
have. Sure. So let me ask you, Roger, so you work as a guest speaker. That means you get free cruises. How did you start doing that?
Well, many, many years ago, I was had my tennis teaching program, and the older ships, even though they were a lot smaller, they would have a tennis court, a small tennis court. So it used to be my job to give lessons in tennis and then run tournaments, like a mixed doubles type of tournament.
Oh, that's fun.
And then when it looked like that was going on, then I switched to golf. And while I was still teaching, we would go twice a year to Bermuda. And the scary part is my wife counts them. We went, by the way, as a non-paying job, I had to pay.
Right, it's a non-paying job. Yeah. Well, absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for calling, Roger. Let's turn to Warren in Washington, New Jersey. Hey, Warren, you're live on the Fromer Travel Show. What's on your mind?
How you guys doing? Great show, as usual.
Hi.
Thanks.
Quick question. My friend Carol is going to England Wednesday. She takes a nephew or a niece every graduation, high school and college. I think this is her last one. Her nephew wanted to go to England and Dublin. She's got two free days, I think, over in England. She's going to be based out of London, and I suggested she go over to Bath, where I had been last year, or Bristol. And while you're talking about tours or private tours or you know, small groups, in that vein, that's kind of what I'm looking for her, to give her some guidance. Any suggestions there? I mean, when I went to Bath, I took a bus trip out to Bristol. I wound up staying out there, and I was kind of touring around by myself. I always meet strangers who drag me around. It's pretty good. But I don't know that she's going to be looking for strangers with her nephew. So what do you have in mind?
Well, yeah, it's really easy to get to both Bristol and Bath from London without taking a vehicle. You can get on a train. They go from, you know, right to the center of town in both cases. So, you know, you may not, plus you'll be faster. You won't have to worry about traffic. And I don't think it's really not necessary to have a guide, I think, in Bath. Bath is very heavily touristed. You go to the Roman baths, which have been there, obviously, for that long. And it's so, so popular. And there's all the little tea rooms all around that it shows itself to you quite easily. Bristol is a bit more different because it's not considered one of the major tourist cities. But there is a wealth of stuff that perhaps might be worth a guide. You have a lot of engineering history in Bristol. It was once a major seaport. There's an engineer who was legendary in the UK called Isambard Kane de Brunel, who did a massive ship they've still got there that was built in the 1840s and a suspension bridge. Bristol's also famous for art and for theater, the Bristol Old Vic being one of the greatest drama schools in the world. So if you can stay overnight, you might be able to catch some good shows. And also graffiti, the famous Banksy, public graffiti artist, is based out of Bristol, we think. But there's lots of his stuff around, too. And you need someone to show that to you. You can either go to britainsbestguides.org, which I talked about earlier today. That links you with official accredited guides. But the Bristol Tourism Information Office does weekly highlights walking tours for free. I think they're on Saturdays. But if you go to visitbristol.co.uk, you'll see that and a list of all the other walking tours that are available on another schedule. And they're all between like nothing and 10 pounds, which is like $13 or $14.
That sounds great. She's not averse to spending money, which is good. But I also, when you were talking about the other woman that suggested Global Greeters or something like that, I was wondering about that too, in that area. I spent a lot of time up in the Clifton area when I was in Bristol, and I realized I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I don't think there is a Global Greeters in Bristol. I may be wrong, but if she wants to look at it, they're not in every destination. These are free, volunteer-led tours. They're in many destinations, but I don't remember seeing it in Bristol. I'm not sure if it's available there.
And one more quick thing. Jason, when I had called another time, I was talking about the Spitalfields area in London, and you said that was really up and coming. I suggested she go there too, so I'm assuming that's still hopping.
It's still hopping, but up and coming in a different way. The skyscrapers are up and coming. They're tearing down a lot of the old buildings very rapidly in Spitalfields. For those who don't know, it's just east of the old city of London, and it was Jack the Ripper's stalking grounds, and it has been newly taken over by the corporations that are tearing down buildings left and right, which is kind of too bad. But yes, it's still hip. It's still happening. Brick Lane is still a center for art and food and market stalls and vintage clothing. She won't go wrong if she hangs around Spitalfields and Shoreditch.
We have to take a break. Before we do, let me remind everybody that this program is brought to you very much so by Allianz Travel Insurance. We partner with Allianz to give their clients terrific travel information to 24 or so destinations, top destinations around the world. So when you buy your insurance policy, you're also going to get info from Fromers. That info could be on the best itineraries, how to choose where to go with your children, how to put together a really perfect day in your destination. To find out more, visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. That's Allianz travelinsurance.com.
The most popular destinations for you and your family, right here. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran, The Fromer Travel Show, 77 WABC.
This program is brought to you by Allianz Travel Insurance. Protect your travel investment with Allianz. Visit Allianz travelinsurance.com. And we would love to talk with you. 800-848-9222 is our number. We had some calls on the screen, but they dropped over the commercial break. So if you call, you will get right on the air. In the meantime, let's talk about the shenanigans that the airlines are pulling once again. And it's
How
long is the show? Yep. And it's that hugely popular, highly esteemed airline, United. United is adding another class of seats. It's going to be in the rows behind premium economy. Are you going to get more legroom? No. Are you going to get any other perks? No. The only thing you're going to get for the extra money that you are going to pay is the right to be closer to the door of the plane. To me, this just defines
chutzpah. I guess United
has
a clue about what its service is like. They know people can't wait to get off.
Yeah. I'm speechless, as you can tell. This just defines chutzpah to me. I can't believe anybody would pay for this. And I hope it fails.
Oh, I know they would. Yeah.
Really? You think so?
They keep doing because people keep paying and they keep accepting it as normal. You know, that now your right is to basically elbow past everyone else because you have a seat, you know, at the front of the plane and you've paid extra for it. And once again, the majority of the passengers, their area is getting smaller and smaller and less serviced. And, you know, it's all because they want you to spend more on these other seats. They're now trying to make the economy seats miserable.
Yeah.
That you spend more.
You're absolutely right. So when you're booking your seat, know that this may come up.
By the way, if you are checking a bag, don't get that seat because you can rush right off the plane if you want, but you're still going to go down to the carousel and be waiting for your bag. I mean, I have global entry, so when I enter the country, I zip right through immigration. But I still have to wait for the bag, so I might as well have waited in that line. Now, if you carry on, great. Yeah, fine. Do it. Shove past everybody else. Pay a little more. Be that guy. But if you're checking a bag, United, these seats aren't for you.
Right, exactly. And interestingly, their rival Delta is hiring. So if you've ever wanted to travel, this is one way to do it. As a flight attendant, Delta is hiring 1,000 new flight attendants, which I don't know if I've ever heard of an airline hiring that many people all at once. So it means...
Yeah, what happened? Did they fire a lot of people? Did they retire? What happened?
I wonder, or maybe it's a sign that they're putting on a lot of new routes. In the past, becoming a flight attendant is actually really, really competitive. Thousands of people apply for very few jobs because for many people it's a dream, you know, to get out and see the world for free in this way. Of course, you don't make that much money. A lot of flight attendants actually live in communal housing with other flight attendants to save money. So there's some fascinating books out there written by current and former flight attendants that talk about the lifestyle. And I think it's a difficult lifestyle, but they do get to travel. So if that appeals to you, Delta is looking. Let's get back to the phones. We have Gina from New Jersey on the line. Hey, Gina, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for answering my phone. I have two questions.
Yes.
First question, I am going to Mediterranean cruise in September.
Uh-huh.
And it's boat disembark from Rome.
Uh-huh.
And I am arriving 1:40 in the afternoon, and just the boat is leaving at 7.
Oh my goodness, that makes me so nervous, Gina. Have you already booked the plane? Have you already bought your ticket?
It came together. Yeah, from a prestige cruise.
Gina, does the cruise line give you the transportation to the ship, or do you have to find your own way to the ship?
No, they arranged everything.
Okay. Here's what I think. I think you can get on board the ship many, many hours before it leaves and just enjoy it. You don't have to get on right. In fact, I don't recommend you wait until it's about to leave. Most people get on the ship starting at about noon or 1 on the day of departure. They go check out the buffet, which will be open. They get the lay of the land. If the cruise line is arranging your transportation from the airport, you won't miss the cruise.
Yeah.
You could miss the cruise if you decide not to go with the cruise line and explore Rome. You can't. There's not enough time. Go explore the ship instead. Have a good time on the ship and consider it the start of your vacation, even though you haven't left the dock yet.
Yeah, and just for our other listeners, I'm not a fan of flying internationally and getting on board the ship that day. It's so much smarter, unless you're buying it from the, even if you're buying it from the cruise line, to be honest with you, because, you know, if you could lose, there are so many delays out of the New York City airports nowadays, and it's not easy to get from Rome to Civitavecchia. It's a couple of hours. You have to get first into the city, then to the train station. I guess they'll be taking Gina on a bus, but I think it's usually a better strategy to fly in the night before the cruise, not to take that risk. But I guess this is how the cruise line set it up for Gina. Have a wonderful time, Gina. Thank you for calling. We have to take one last break. When we come back, we'll have a good 5 minutes to talk. So give us a call. 800-848-9222 is our number. Just a short commercial break, and then we're back.
Get a jump on vacation plans. The Fromer Travel Show. Pauline Fromer and Jason Cochran. 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm Jason Cochran here with Pauline Fromer in the last few minutes, but still enough time to take your calls. 800-848-9222. Pauline, there was one thing that we kept meaning to mention the last few weeks. It's the new rule about powders that the TSA has put out.
Oh, yeah.
It's for international flights, not for domestic flights, from what I hear. But now there's a limit. You can only carry as much powder, that includes bath salts or, you know, talcum powder, whatever, that fits in about the size of a Coke can. So it's one more thing you need to put in your checked baggage and not your cosmetics bag or whatever that you take with you. Put all your powder away because it will start to raise eyebrows starting now.
Yeah, good advice. We have a phoner. We have Robert on the line. Hey, Robert, thank you for calling. Robert, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, me too. I'm interested in some information. Do you have any particular information on tours of Scotland?
What kind of tours? You mean like soup to nuts? They get you hotels and...
Well, specifically historical or, dare I say, haunted tours. I know that there are a lot of cities that have haunted this, haunted that, haunted London, haunted Edinburgh. I'm particularly interested in an aspect of Scottish history. Are you familiar with the medical scandal of the middle 1820s in Edinburgh?
Burkes and Wills.
No, Burke and Hare.
Hare, that's it.
Burke and Hare.
Yes. That was in Edinburgh.
Sure.
They were stealing bodies because you couldn't get a body to do medical experiments, so they kept stealing them.
They were resurrection men.
And yes, resurrection men.
And in the case when they couldn't, when they ran out of bodies from the graveyards, they conked people over the head, mostly tinkers and travelers. And in fact, there's an entire set of sub-traveler folklore called Burker Tales, but that's another story. I'm curious to know whether you know whether anybody has a tour that specifically takes you past the digs of Burke and Hare in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh is huge on ghost tours, haunted. Burke and Hare, that's still on everyone's lips there. I messed it up, but it's Burke and Hare. There are several major tour companies in Edinburgh that will clonk you over the head trying to get you to take their tours. There's a big industry there.
Love it.
Mercat
love it.
Tours is one, M-E-R-C-A-T. There's Old Reekie, A-U-L-D-R-E-E-K-I-E, which is Old Stinky, I think it means in Scottish, and City of the Dead Tours, and all of them... They do kind of a mix of all the other legends of Edinburgh, but if you start with those three, it might lead you to a Burke and Hare specialized tour. But there's tons to choose from when you hit the ground at Edinburgh, and you barely even have to make a reservation. And you can go underneath. Edinburgh was built sort of on old Edinburgh's, on the old city hill, so that if you dig down far enough, you find little city streets that have been covered up.
Hmm.
And they're underground tours of these old abandoned rooms that are part of the – it's so much fun.
One last question, and this is a sort of a how to get there. I've been to London many, many times. Is there or is there not a train that one can take from London to Edinburgh that you know of?
Oh, there's many a day. There's probably 10 that leave a day. From London, King's Cross Station, it'll take about 4 hours, 4.5, and it just goes straight up the East Coast through York, through Newcastle, and you arrive from the middle of the city to the middle of the city.
Newcastle, Geordie country. Thank you very much. Listen, this is a great show, and you'll be hearing from me because I'm a specialist on the British Isles, and there's another time when I want to call you and ask about tours of Wales because I'm very much into Welsh folklore and history.
Okay, terrific. We look forward to it.
And when you do book that train, book it to Edinburgh, Waverley Station, not Haymarket, because Waverley is the one in the middle of town. That's good advice for anyone going to Edinburgh.
Now, do you know if Tours of the Dead, there's one in New York with the same name. You actually go around the town in a hearse, and they take you to all of the sites where really grim, scary things happened. And it's well done. The guy who runs it wears a top hat and kind of intones his...
Dark tourism, necrotourism, that's a big niche industry. There's a whole Netflix series about it right now. People who do much more hardcore stuff, like Chernobyl. But, you know, that's a fascinating thing that tourists do like to do. Cemeteries are some of the most popular tourist sites in the world.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, we thank you so much for listening. We ended on a dark note. Next week, more light. Please, if you're traveling, bon voyage.